There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
This week's guest on the Mike Wise Show covers the NBA in the mecca of basketball, New York City. And he's so dialed in, he should work for the phone company. You're killing me with this cheesy writing. Darlene, please rescue me and do your thing.
The Mike Wise Show is a presentation of Pure Hoops Media. The Mike Wise Show is hosted by a guy who played basketball atrociously for Hawaii Pacific College, which forced him into journalism. And, oh yeah, he wrote about basketball for the New York Times, the Washington Post, and ESPN. He's also a wise ass, and so are many of his guests. Right, Mike?
Stephon Bondi has been covering the NBA for the New York Daily News for 10 years. He has two teams he gets to cover, the Brooklyn Nets and the New York Knicks. And look, I'm just glad to have him on the show. I feel old because, Stephon, when you met me, you were but a child. You were not a sports writing god at that point. Is this true?
I don't even remember meeting you. When was this?
I obviously was very memorable in your mind. I want to say I met you through your father when Frank Isola had a thing over at his house one day.
Okay. I thought you meant when my father was writing and I was just a real kid. So I thought that's what you were talking about.
I probably met you then too. But it was forgettable for me too.
Okay. All right.
Welcome to the program, brother.
All right, man. Hey, thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. So it's not too inside basketball. Stephon Bondi's father, it was Philip Bondi, not only a friend of mine, but a colleague for a long time, or longtime Daily News columnist. I will never forget your father's greatest line. We were, I don't know if I told you this, we were at the Athens Olympics, and we were sitting next to each other. And the March of the Nations was coming in, which is a big deal, you know, like, you know, Azerbaijan, Antigua, you know, and everything. And all of a sudden we get to, like, I don't know what it was, the Congo or something. And he just looks at me and he goes, Marriott.
He was
ensuring, because we all, as sports writers, stay at Marriott's and accumulate points. He was figuring out what countries actually had Marriott's, what countries essentially he would go to if he had vacation points. It was hilarious, and it was sort of the whole thing was inside baseball, but I loved it.
Yeah.
It's your dad, like, as well. As much as he had a great social conscience, and he has all these great philosophical ideas, at the bottom line, it's all about Marriott points.
There you go. Speaking of Marriott, I miss him. It's been a while, unfortunately. So hopefully we'll get rid of this pandemic soon.
Yeah. You haven't seen your father in a while?
No, I see him. We do the socially distant outside thing, so I have seen him. He's doing well. He's teaching at Montclair State.
Oh, great. That's good. Weirdest thing of all, there's a pandemic going on and training camps are suddenly underway and we're starting a season that was just finished weeks ago. I don't know, were you always on call? Were you always, did you even get any time off between the finals, the playoffs, and now?
You know what? Yeah, I did have a little time off, but it feels like I've had a lot of time off because I haven't been able to go to any of these events. And even when the season does restart, reporters are not going to be allowed inside the games, inside practices. So, you know, this has been different for me, for all writers, in that we've had to lean on different skills, whereas you're not allowed to go, you know, do one-on-one interviews or go, you know, mingle with executives at games or practices. You're now forced to use a different skill set, which is, you know, get on the phones and build relationships remotely. So that's been that's been the hardest part of this for me personally, is trying to, you know, pivot and figure out different ways to do, to be a beat writer, because it's definitely different.
Yeah, it is. And I don't envy you, but I also, there is something to be said for, you don't have to be at every single practice. You don't have to, it almost reminds me of how European soccer teams are covered, where they don't provide any access anyway. So you're essentially, as a columnist or as a writer, even as an objective beat writer, you can have a little bit more say-so based on your observations, as opposed to being so weighed down by quotes and whatnot. Do you feel your coverage is going to blossom in this, or has blossomed this pandemic, or do you feel like your gig, part of your gig, is getting that inside story and face-to-face conversation with somebody that no one has?
Oh, that's a good point. I think some of the game coverage is going to be worse, but the other stuff, the off day stuff, where we're allowed to be more opinionated, I think that almost helps when you're not so immersed in the, hey, we got to wait for coach to speak and then just write off whatever he says. So yeah, I think you're right in that, you know, we have a little bit more freedom here, and that can help with coverage a little bit. We'll see what happens when the season starts. Like, it's crazy. Take this. The Knicks haven't played since mid-March, right? So what is that?
That's right.
They haven't played a game. So it's been really tough for me. I mean, yeah, I cover some of the Nets, but most of my main beat is the Knicks. And yeah, I'm covering a team that hasn't played in almost a year. It's crazy.
That is insane. I forgot they weren't an that's right. They weren't an invite to the bubble, as some of the worst teams were. That's crazy. They haven't played since March. When I was hired at the New York Times in 1994, you were born then, right? Right.
Yeah. I was 14. I was born in 80. Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Good. So when I was hired that year, I was hired to cover the Nets. Now, for me, being a hayseed from Sacramento, as I was at the time, it was like a life-changing experience getting a job at the New York Times. But I'm sure a lot of other people in town were like, oh, the guy got the Nets beat. Well, the Nets were like the ninth professional team in New York and probably ninth on the totem pole. You can't say that anymore. I want to talk to you about the Nets more than the Knicks. It's amazing what money, relocation, and acquiring a couple stars can do.
Yeah, you're right. But I will say this. Nationally, the Nets are a bigger story than the Knicks right now, and that has to do with Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant.
You're right.
Locally, though, if you look at the ratings and the number of clicks per story, and it's still a Knicks town, right? It's still a Knicks town. And I think it will always be. I mean, with this, there's such a history there. There's, you know, families grow, you know, fathers passes on to their sons, and the Nets just do not still have the type of juice of the Knicks in New York City. Now, like I said, nationally, it's a different story, but in New York, it's still very much a Knicks town.
Yeah. I always wonder if that changes if they win a couple titles, but even then it's almost, these aren't homegrown players. They were acquired. Steve Nash and Mike D'Antoni are running the show now. It's an interesting dynamic with boss and player exchanging places from their Phoenix days, really.
Yeah. And it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. I think Steve Nash he's taken on a tough job. And a lot of people say it's an easy job because he has so much talent. But the personalities on that team with Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant, and I don't know if you saw Kyrie Irving came out on a podcast and said, well, anybody can be the head coach on any given certain day. So, you know, and from my understanding, Steve Nash kind of downplayed that comment when he was asked about it on media day. But, you know, I heard that when he heard it, he was initially taken aback. So that's something that bears monitoring, is how Steve Nash, a neophyte coach, is going to handle these these huge personalities. And, you know, Kyrie Irving has in the past shown that he's very hard to coach. And when you have this dynamic of this first year coach with these more experienced assistants and these superstar players, you know, it's a potentially combustible situation. And so that's going to be interesting to watch throughout the season.
Well, did you go to Brooklyn Nets Media Day?
No, I did. We have a main Brooklyn Nets writer, Christian Winfield. And I handled the Knicks this time.
But I'm saying, that were there tons of people at this media day?
So there's no media day. It's all virtual.
Kyrie Irving still skips it.
I know. It was. I can't. Like
you, how do you skip a media day in which you don't actually have to meet the writers face to face that annoy you?
He has this issue where every time he does an interview, he communicates his message poorly, right? He goes off on tangents and he says things that he probably shouldn't, and then he blames the media for reporting what he says, and that's kind of been his pattern. And he used the excuse, well, you know, I don't want to be misinterpreted here, so I'm just not going to speak. Well, I mean, it's your fault that you did not communicate the message properly. That's the way I feel.
Yeah. KD and Kyrie can decide the alpha dog situation, but the team has a lot of talent around. It's deep. In some ways, maybe too deep. Will Caris LeVert get enough touches to be happy?
I mean. Yeah. I mean, listen, I think, you know, here's the thing about Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. They don't play the full season. Especially Kevin Durant coming off that Achilles injury. You know, I know Steve Nash said that we're not going to play them every single game. I expect – so it's 72 games. I expect Kevin Durant to play maybe 55. You know, he hasn't played in over a year. Kyrie Irving, you know, last season he only played 20 games. So you're going to need depth on this team. And that's Spencer Dinwiddie, and that's Caris LeVert. And that's really where they're going to play a big role. When they're all together on the court, it's going to be hard. There's not only one ball, and it's going to be hard to see how that's going to work, but they do need depth because, like I said, those two main guys are not going to play every single game.
Yeah. Dinwiddie, Landry Schmidt, Jared Allen, DeAndre Jordan, Joe Harris, Taurean Prince, and Jeff Green. I mean, on one hand, you've got a heck of a rotation. On the other, Steve Nash has really got his work cut out for him. I don't see them coming out of the East, based on this track record, like you said, for injuries and where the Nets are. But you know, they could get to the second round and then become like a title contender the next year, and guys are healthy. Who knows? I'm hopeful only because I like watching those two players play at their very best.
Yeah, and I think they have enough talent to get to the Eastern Conference Finals, maybe get to the finals. The question is, so like when they put these super teams together, we've seen it before. When he did it in Miami, I don't know if you'd call Brooklyn Nets a super team. They have two superstars. But when they did it in Miami, it took about a year before they really reached their potential. It's going to require some time of these two guys playing together and incorporating a new system with a new coach.
Yep.
You know, it usually takes some time for it to mesh. And so I think year one, there's going to be some bumps, and we'll see what happens.
Well, year two, it took LeBron till year two and AD, of course, but it's obviously the Clippers who had to like tear down a lot of the players around Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. A lot of people thought they were going to run the table last year, and it was like, no. It takes a while to develop chemistry. It takes a while for roles to be adjusted to. All those things matter. At some point, I like Mike D'Antoni. I don't know what your relationship was with him when he was with the Knicks, but in some ways, Jack McCallum's famous book, 7 Seconds or Less, is turning around into, you could write another book, Second Round or Less. You like that?
Yeah,
you can use that if you want.
It's not as catchy. All right, I'll go for it. But it's good. I like you bring up my relationship with D'Antoni because I don't really have one because I was covering the Nets at that time, and I was.
That's right. They stuck you on the lousy team in town.
Yeah. So I'm going to pivot to that and say I covered Jason Kidd's first year as coach, and there's been a lot of comparisons there to Steve Nash taking over. I mean, they're both former players who never had a coaching job, head coaching job before, getting thrust immediately into a team with a lot of superstars that happens to be the same team, the Brooklyn Nets. And Jason Kidd's experience was not good. He came in and you know, it was a mismatched roster, obviously. I think this team has more talent. But that shows how this can go poorly. How when you bring in a novice coach who, you know, really has to learn on the job. You know, what happened with Jason Kidd is he almost got like he became he couldn't take like he had the situation with Lawrence Frank where he felt like he needed to exert his power on Lawrence Frank, even though he hired Lawrence Frank to be kind of his helper. And he decided, well, you know, you're kind of overstepping your bounds. He ended up firing Lawrence Frank. And the whole first half of the season was a bad learning experience for Jason Kidd. So that's kind of an example of how things can go poorly when you have a situation like what's happening in Brooklyn right now.
You're going to be covering the Knicks, like you said, for the first time in almost a year in some ways. And I think there was some modest excitement over some of the team's dealings and draft day and all that. Is that just because the bar is so low now, or are New York fans just much more savvy than we realized, Stefan?
No, the bar is really low. I can't believe that Knicks fans are happy with this summer.
It's amazing.
Literally the line is, well, at least we didn't do anything stupid. And that means it's a great success. I mean, they had the second most cap space heading into free agency. The Atlanta Hawks had the most, and the Atlanta Hawks did a really good job upgrading their roster. The Knicks decided they basically didn't want to do anything. But here's the problem. They have cap space. It just disappears if you don't use it, right? I mean, it doesn't roll over. So, you know, it became a waste. And don't forget why this cap space was created. This cap space was created because the Knicks traded Kristaps Porzingis to go after Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving. That didn't work. So then they signed a bunch of one-year players because, hey, we want cap space again in 2020. Well, now you have it and you don't use it. So at what point does it become what we have to upgrade this roster? And I think a lesson was – from the missing out on Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving should have been, at least the lesson should have been, that we actually need to have a good team out there and win some games and possibly make the playoffs in order to attract free agents. And it seems like they didn't learn that lesson because now they're putting out another roster that's probably not going to make the playoffs, and then they're going to go big game hunting again next summer in 2021 with cap space. And I can't see why a player like Giannis Antetokounmpo or Kawhi Leonard or whoever else is going to be out there will want to pick a team that has been in the lottery for 8 straight years. So that's where I see the flaw in this plan.
Yeah, the weirdest thing is that New York and Madison Square Garden has become the perfect place to visit instead of live and stay, which is just sad. I mean, it's like from the Brooklyn outhouse to the Manhattan, the Brooklyn penthouse to the Manhattan outhouse. And Leon Rose, I mean, you know, great, good for him. He's the next, he's the next Rob Pelinka. Let's take our agent world and let's go fix a team. In fact, everybody's changing roles. Lee Jenkins was a sports writer, and now he's doing something with the Los Angeles Clippers. I'm thinking that me and you should be like commissioner in a week. It's crazy. Does Leon Rose know what he's doing?
Well, everybody said, I don't know him too well, but everybody says he's a very smart guy. He's a very honest guy. He's a guy with integrity. But, you know, he never ran a team before, and he has this close associate, you know, World Wide West.
William Wesley.
So William Wesley has become a top executive under Leon, and those two have been tied at the hip their whole careers. Basically, you know, Wesley helps get Leon his clients. You know, that's when he was an agent, that was their relationship. And now Wesley is really, from what I've heard, is really basically running the organization. Now I'm sure Leon has a big role as well, but you know, Wesley has a huge role there. And these two guys, they've signed a lot of Kentucky players. Wesley has a huge connection to the Kentucky program. He's Calipari's agent. He's helped that program get recruits in the past, and they signed a bunch of CAA clients. which, you know, that was the agency where they both worked before joining the Knicks. Now,
it's an unholy alliance. Let me just say, you don't have to say it. It's an unholy alliance.
Yeah, I mean, did you cover the Knicks when this was all? I mean, this is not new.
No, I didn't cover them then, but I know the whole deal. Like William Wesley would be on the phone with Isaiah at times and be like, "I'm getting you this guy." You know, it just look, the guy has incredible power. I can still call him up as long as I don't use any quotes of his. He's a weird dude, but World Wide West is sort of he was at the forefront of essentially every sneaker basketball scandal there ever was. So stop with me, or like this. I understand Leon Rose has got integrity. William Wesley knows a lot of people, and he's a power broker. God bless him. I don't know. I don't see it happening.
Yeah, I mean, if it all works out, it's going to be great. You can't really criticize them for signing all these Kentucky players, signing all these CAA players. But if it doesn't work out, then they've opened themselves to, you basically just looked out your people this whole time, and that's not a way to run a basketball organization. So we have to wait and see how this all shakes out. I think the Tom Thibodeau hire was a good hire, though. I think he's a great coach, and I think they're doing him a disservice by not giving him a roster that's worthy of a playoff spot. I think he's a win now coach, and you gave him a roster that's not equipped to win now. So it's going to be a rough season, I believe.
Tom Thibodeau doesn't always trust rookies. I love Tibbs from when he was an assistant when I covered the Knicks back in the day, but with such a young team, man, I feel like he's going to have to change his style a little bit to be successful.
Yeah. And I think he learned a lot from his time in Minnesota, because, you know, there were a lot of ups and downs there, and his relationships with Karl Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins probably could have been better.
Yeah.
So I think he learned from that experience, and he has a bunch of assistant coaches that he's going to lean on, because, you know, in the past, Thibodeau wanted to do everything himself, right? And now he has two assistant coaches, one in Kenny Payne, who was the former Kentucky assistant, and another in Johnny Bryan, who the Knicks are paying big money to. I mean, big money for assistants. And he's been, from my understanding, the training, you know, the individual workouts have started. From my understanding, he's been leaning a lot on those guys, which would be kind of a difference from how he operated in the past. So, you know, maybe he's learned to delegate. He's learned that, you know, relationships with young players, you've got to cultivate them because they're important, certainly in today's NBA with player empowerment and everything else. So, you know, we'll see how this evolves with, like you said, a very young roster. The Knicks do not have one player in his 30s, not one player. Everybody's 29 or younger. So,
God.
We'll see.
That sounds like the media business right now, you know? They're just – it's crazy.
Young man's game.
It's like, you know, and I'm shocked too, because you think a guy like me, 56-year-old white guy, would be a huge commodity in this environment.
Well, you're very talented. You're very talented. And if you want to get on a media debate, there's a lot of problems I have with the basketball media today. And one of them is that we've all become basically like PR spokesmen. Nobody writes a critical word anymore. It's crazy to me.
Yeah, I was going to say, I saw your last story about Kyrie and KD combining on a Nike signature brand.
Yeah.
And all I kept thinking was, they got Stephon Bondi too. He's part of the machine. Oh my God!
Yeah, that was a tough one. But
it was actually an interesting story, because I didn't really know that they had it. It was like how they got together, and you know, it's the kind of story I would read, and it would, and especially because I know it's from you, and you've always been honest. And I think what you go off on the media for a little bit, and how it's become, I'm of the opinion that because access has become such a big thing, and getting like access, we're also brainwashed by it, that guys are sort of, they'll do anything for it. I guess we were all in the tank for someone that we liked and respected at some point in our careers, irrespective of who we covered and when. But man, it's hard to watch now. Some guys just sort of being subservient to agents and players and teams because they want favorable status. And that I never, you know, at no point was I ever worried about whether the Knicks liked me or whether somebody was going to give, you know, an agent was going to have favor with me. I just didn't care about those kinds of things because they got in the way of me doing my job.
You're 100% accurate. And that's the problem. I think the power dynamic between the media and the players slash teams has shifted over the years where the players, because they have all these huge social media outreaches, they don't need us as much anymore. And, you know, the journalists need these players, or we, you know, think we need these players for access. So we're willing to bend and write positive things just to get that access. And, you know, you're right. It's being a slave to the access and not being honest a lot of the times too. So it's unfortunate.
Who do you read and really respect still as a writer yourself and somebody that you might just NBA or otherwise? What do you read? What do you really ingest and think, oh yeah, this person still got it or whatever?
Mike Wise.
Well, you know, and the check is in the mail for that one, but but maybe somebody that writes more basketball than I do now. I don't write as much as I used to.
No.
Thank you though. That was nice.
No, let me think. I can't really tell you I have a favorite anymore. I wish I could, but I can't. I can't tell you that, hey, you know, there's somebody out there that every morning or every week I have to go click on his or her article. It's not really like that anymore. It's more of a case-by-case basis.
Yeah.
You know, sports, you know, I love sports. I used to love Sports Illustrated. And
isn't that sad what it's become?
Yeah, I know. That's really rough for me. That was something I enjoyed getting every week and opening up and reading all the great writers. There's too many to mention, but, you know, that was really heartbreaking for me.
Pete Vessey?
So Pete Vessey obviously has a long history in New York, and one of them was he would call other writers' names in print, and one of them was my father, King Kong Bundy, I think he called him. And they called Harvey a bunch of names, and I'm close with
He used to call me He-Man Mike Wise, like that, because I would take on Grunfeld or something. He-Man Mike Wise, and then he would say it was like it was a Biggie line, like you gotta go, I gotta go, and and I was like, you want to fight? Okay, you know, like, and so, and he's a pretty tough guy, so
okay,
so, but Vessey went from I think loving me to hating me in about a week. It was amazing.
Well, he called me. So he was still in the business when I first got in. He was still at the Post, and I did something on Twitter where I broke some story about Jason Kidd meeting with the Nets for a meeting, and then he followed up with it almost immediately afterwards on Twitter, and then somebody put it out there, hey, Bondi had this first, and then he called me a lame ass on Twitter and called me all these different names on Twitter and then blocked me. And then recently
– come on!
And then recently I was doing a story about Rucker, and I contacted him. And he, you know, he has this long history with Rucker where he was actually coached during the Rucker
years.
And he could not have been more helpful and gracious.
Wow.
And since then, you know, I think we've talked a few times, emailed back and forth a couple times, and he was great. And I appreciated all that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, it's good. My whole thing with him is I don't even care that he doesn't like me or not. He's such a valuable resource. And he goes back to, so, you know, I mean, I always say this. If not for Peter Vessey, me and dozens of guys who covered the NBA as a league would not have their job, because that job did not exist until the New York Post made him cover the league, and nobody else had it. Like Mark Heisler from the LA Times, who's, you know, now retired, and all these other guys that would cover the league as a whole, they didn't have those jobs until Peter Vessey got his. And it was like, I'm like, dude, you know, like, The guy should be treasured, but he's such a bitter human being that, you know, what can you do? I'll be there. Just give me a couple more years.
I think he's done was amazing, but I think he became too much of a policeman about the beat, about different writers, right? Like he always wants to police every writer, and that hurt a lot of his relationships. But there's no question that a lot of the things he did was truly remarkable.
Yeah, it's like we're all ombudsman now because we all say, like, we all want to talk about the good old days and everything else. And it's like, my biggest thing is, and I, you know, I, whatever, I'm congenial with Woj, but I you know, I, that whole Shams, whatever is, guys, I haven't even met him before. He's probably, he's a really good reporter, but it's like, if they're breaking all the stories, and none of the people on the teams, Oklahoma City or Sacramento, are breaking stories about their teams, that tells me now less about the unaggressive posture of beat writers in their local markets than it does. There's an unholy alliance on top between agents and those guys, and it's just like, unless it stops, the NBA media circle will die, and they'll die with it.
Yeah, I see that. And one of the new phenomenons, I don't know if you've noticed it on Twitter, is when either Woj or Shams or whoever else is breaking a transaction story, they now cite the agent as telling them in the actual tweet. So it's the agent getting publicity for doing this. It's a, it's an interesting dynamic, to say the least.
I know guys who've gotten – I know a writer, and I won't mention him, who's essentially – gotten other players deals because he has a working relationship with his agent where he'll put out bad stories every now and then just to increase leverage. Like, I like that. There's a lot of great agents out there that I like. They're just good people. I would never do that for them. It was unethical. It was lousy. It was lousy business. And it was sort of a scratch your back, scratch my, I was like, come on, man, this just, I can't. Oh God, I'm glad I'm not you anymore.
Yeah, it's.
I mean, I like your youth. I like your youth, and I like your life. But I don't know if I could cover a team like I used to.
It's evolving, and it's tough to see where it's going. You're right. But yeah. One thing it does open you up to is, and we talked about being in the, you know, being a slave to access is, hey, if you know that somebody else is going to break the story regardless, and they're not going to give it to you, that allows you more freedom to be critical of the teams you cover, right?
Exactly.
Because you're not worried about losing out on the scoop.
Right. You're not as despised as Frank Isola was by the Knicks, are you at all?
No, I don't think that's possible.
Yeah. No. I was waiting for the longest time for them to plant a car bomb underneath one of, you know, the right side of his vehicle. If they would have asked me to do it, I probably would have for them. But it's like, wow, that was a deep, ugly relationship. And you know, I guess it continues, although Frank's on Sirius now, so it doesn't matter as much.
Well, I mean, Frank, and I always say this, Frank was right about everything he wrote, because this team has been a nightmare for 20 years, and the owner has been a problem. So the results should dictate the coverage, and that's kind of what it's been like.
Jim Dolan and Dan Snyder should go on vacation together and just sort of like compare stories of getting in the way of each other's franchises and how they just sabotage two decades of civic love for a team almost.
Now, I don't want to get too off topic, but I know you were on top of the Washington football team and the change of the nickname. What do you think of what they've done here?
I mean, it's a great question. It's one I would take I would go on a tangent with this any day of the week. It's great because even though it came because of financial pressure and they could have controlled that narrative, they got backed into a corner. I think it's great that it happened. And, you know, and what it's done is it's forced a lot of other high schools to reconsider their own nicknames. And like, there's been two dozen already in the last, in the months after they changed. And, you know, when you talk to people on the, and I'm doing this book on Billy Mills, the guy who, won the 64 gold medal in the 10,000 meters. He's an Oglala Lakota Sioux guy, and you're out of the Pine Ridge Reservation. And these parents, all they talk about is like, I don't really care myself, but my kids, I don't want them caricatured anymore. I don't want them going to school thinking, you know, I'm this, I'm a savage warrior from the 1800s. Like, my kids, don't put my kids in a time warp. Like, they want to be educators, they want to be lawyers. And like, when you see the American Psychological Association studies on what the images do to those kids, I think it's a no-brainer in some ways, you know? Like I know a lot of Native American people that are older, like, we got bigger problems on the reservation. But it's interesting, like, they'll have arguments with their kids, and their kids are like, no, we're better than this, Dad. We need this to go away. And so, to me, it's good that it's fostering conversations on the reservations. But more than that, it's just, like, the right thing to do. You know, it's like, I don't get it. Like, I just don't get, you know, like we would never have a team called the Fighting Whiteys, although right, maybe right. we should, because Trump is a freaking jerk. Oh, sorry, I don't want to get political.
Yeah, now we're going real off topic, huh?
Yeah. So, before I let you go, you know, you come from a long history of people that I feel like that I know your father enough to say he stood on the right side of history on many things. Where are you on the whole social conscience movement in the NBA? Do you think they've gone too far and let the players sort of take over the messaging and alienated fans that are on the fence? Or do you think that this is a time of racial reckoning in society where we just need to be extra sensitive about this and realize that this is part of our world now? Where are you on it?
Oh, I think that they should give the players the freedom to express this, because there was a lot of anger out there, right? And we saw that in the bubble. I mean, the Milwaukee Bucks decided not to play. There was and the reason behind that was the anger and the fear about what's going on in the world. So I don't think you can try to suppress that. And I think the NBA did a good job of allowing the players to express themselves and sending the right message. Now, at the same time, there was the contradiction of China. So, you know, it's hard to reconcile that, because
you believe that was a year ago or even less than a year ago. I mean, a little bit more than a year ago. That's just crazy.
So it's tough to reconcile. Hey, you know, we stand on the right side of social justice. But, you know, if it hurts our bottom line too much, we're going to pretend it doesn't exist. So that was hard for me to reconcile. And I understand the difference. Listen, you're dealing with situations in America that are affecting a lot of the people that the players and a lot of people, players' families. And China's in a whole different country. And I do understand that difference. But still, there was that contradiction. But that doesn't mean that the NBA should not allow their players to speak about social justice in this country. And I think they did a good job of doing that in the bubble. And we'll see how that moves forward beyond. The ratings were terrible. And I don't personally think that had to do with the messaging. But I don't think that, you know, there was some talk about putting Black Lives Matters on the court for this season. I don't think that's going to happen.
I don't think it had anything to do with it. I just think people don't care about sports like they did. They just don't. Like, yeah, the diehard NBA fans and NBA Twitter is still alive and well, and it's a great distraction. But most, even me, I find myself like going, all right, it was good for LeBron. He won, and it was a great, amazing thing that they came back and did it. But like George Carl said a couple weeks ago on the podcast, he goes, you think Jamal Murray is having that kind of series in front of a really loud crowd on the road? Like, maybe, but he goes, I don't think he's making all those shots. And I'm thinking, yeah, the Heat, you know, nobody had to go to Boston and nobody had to go to the TD Bank Garden or whatever it's called now. Nobody had to go to the Garden to have a loud, throaty Boston crowd in their ear. I know Bruce Bernstein loves this, my producer, because he's freaking Boston Homer. But you didn't have that kind of passion and that kind of he just flipped me the bird in the middle of the podcast. I want that noted on the audio that's not something that's appropriate for a producer or anyone. And so at any rate, I mean, these guys, I like, I'm not saying that all these guys who had breakout years like Tyler Hero and all these guys that people were saying, you know, are going to be the new stars of the NBA, but I want to see them on a loud, proud visiting court on the road in the playoffs before I make a distinction about whether they're going to be, you know, a perennial great player.
So you're saying that the lack of a crowd has taken some of the joy out of watching it?
I don't know about the joy, because I still loved it in many ways. I didn't think I would, but it's still every sport. I love the people, the whole pageantry of it. I got into sports as a kid because, you know, like when boxing was big, like when Sugar Ray Leonard or Muhammad Ali, they would make the entrance to the ring, man. It was the pageantry of it. Like, oh no, they're coming out. It's going to be a fight. And the crowd just, it was bubbling with anticipation. And you still got that, you know, before game seven or, you know, whether it was football playoff or whatever, there was an anticipation in the arena. And now, man, it's like the world is one big pickup game.
I agree.
Doesn't have the same kind of buzz and pizzazz, and I don't think until the crowd comes back you'll ever really have the numbers that you did.
No, I agree with you, and there's different elements to it too. Obviously playing in the summertime was a problem. They thought, like, Mark Cuban had been pitching, well, we should adjust our entire schedule and play in the summer, and then they found out, well, you know, not as many people are going to watch us if we do that. And then the other stuff is the cord cutting. You know, a lot of young people just don't watch sports anymore.
No.
It's just the way it's going. But I
watch it on their phones.
Watch it on their phones, watch highlights. Only pay attention to the stats because it affects their fantasy team or it affects their DraftKings bet or whatever it is. So that's been the trend. But I agree with you. You know what was tough to watch without fans was baseball. That was something that I really struggled with. It was just so quiet and miserable.
Quiet, so miserable, and like the pop-up fans, like the people in the back, it reminded me of one of those old arcade things where you're like shooting you're shooting the rifle and the people pop up and you got to hit the people. And it's like, it was so bad. It was almost like it's a reminder of how bad the pandemic was. It wasn't like sort of... anything like yet you're not masking anything. You might as well just put a curtain there.
Yeah, depressing.
It was comical in some ways. Yeah. Like, you know, can I be one of the pop-up fans to see, you know, are they allowed, are those people allowed to get upset as well? I mean, come on, it's a joke. It's a freaking cardboard cutout. Oh God. All right, last final thought. Do the Knicks start December 22nd as well?
And their first game is the 23rd at the Indiana Pacers.
Will you be there?
I have the option of going. I have not decided yet. But because, like I said, there is no reason for me to go for access because I can – everything is Zoom.
Young kids, right?
Yeah, I do. So
do you guys do Hanukkah, Christmas? What do you do?
So I'm half Jewish and half Christian.
Oh, God so bless you. I can do both.
But we don't really only do Christmas. I'm not a good Jew.
Yeah. All right. Well, Bruce can fix that.
All right.
He goes to all the high holidays. Yeah. Right. I think that's great. We do Christmas. And like, if it's December 22nd, I'm telling my office right now I am staying home for Christmas because my kids are going to be thinking about it. You got too much going on. If I do anything else on this podcast, I need to tell you, you need to tell your office today, you just don't feel comfortable going because of the pandemic and where the numbers are spiking. And of course, it's going to be a huge lie, but nonetheless, they won't hear this podcast. Only certain people do. And what's going to happen is you will essentially get off of Christmas. You will spend it with your kids. You'll be much happier because I'm going to tell you why. The most miserable Christmas I ever spent, I swear to God, Neil Amder, God bless him, my sports editor who hired me at the New York Times, calls me up and he says, hey, you want to cover the Knicks and Bulls on Christmas Day? And I'm like, it was like my first, I think it was my second year. And I was like, or maybe it was my first year. And he said, And I said, yeah, okay, I guess I can't say no. He goes, yeah, because Cliff Brown, you know, covers the Knicks. He wants it off. And, you know, we really, you know, it's in Chicago and miserable day in Chicago. I'm at the downtown Marriott. I don't know if you know who Howie Blatt is. Howie Blatt is a former New York Daily News sports writer. And, of course, they always ask all the Jewish people to work on Christmas, which is still wrong in itself. I mean, Jewish people on Christmas should be out eating Chinese food, like most of the people I know in New York. But I'm thinking to myself, like, okay, I'm meeting Howie Blatt at Christmas morning at the Alley's Grill for, you know, a freaking piece of crispy French toast. And I'm not with my family back home in California. Oh, it was crippling. Hearing Pat Riley talk about losing that day and how awful it was, I'm like, no, the Son of Man was born, you son of a bitch.
Keep in mind, I've been home for 9 months straight or 10 months or whatever it is. My wife will buy those tickets for me. Okay, she's probably looked at the Knicks schedule as soon as it came out and said, you know what, get out of here, get out of here, get out of here.
Yeah, but your kids need you home. I don't care. All right, this has been great. I really appreciate you joining us on short notice. And, man, have a great season. And most of all, knowing you and your family a little bit, man, be safe.
All right, thanks a lot for having me.
That was dope.
Time to wrap for this week. Thank you to our guest, Stephon Bondi of the New York Daily News, for sharing his feelings about New York basketball. Thanks to my producer, Bruce Bernstein, for his wisdom, guidance, and hairstyling advice. Have you listened to Full Court with Fisher and Kay yet? Jenny and Kara are wise beyond their years and have the college hoop scene locked down for Pure Hoops Media. Their show drops each Tuesday. Catch and Shoot 2.0 with Otto and Aaron is here each Wednesday. And Buckets, Boards, and Blocks with Monica McNutt and King McClure have a fresh show on Thursdays. BJ Armstrong and Eric Newman have the Pure Hoops podcast each Friday. And yes, yours truly is back next Monday with a new Mike Wise show.
All right, let's go. Time to stick the landing.
Finally, COVID-19 is still crushing us. Is COVID-19 good or bad? Bad, says Margot, my young 2.5-year-old daughter. Be smart. Wear a mask. Keep your distance in public. Don't be selfish. Treat everyone around you with respect. And Margot, you know this as well as I do. Keep the medical professionals and frontline workers in your prayers. And keep working for social justice and an inclusive society. Until next week, Margot, say peace out.
Peace out.
Really loud. Say peace out.
Peace out.
I got her working. No child labor card for her.
The Mike Wise Show used to be called the Wise Ass Show, but it remains a presentation of Pure Hoops Media.